Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into running backs. We did the quarterbacks, and now we're diving into the running backs, the contract situations here. So looking around here, and we've got, I think it's an interesting combination because a couple of cut candidates for this year. Kareem Hunt, $6.25 million, could save it all. So I think there could be an extension or something in line or potentially a restructure. I'd be surprised. It's a lot of money, even though they don't necessarily have a specific need for it at present. But with the signing of like Clowney and some other things there, you could think that that's a lot. I mean, that's just a lot of money generally, but you could think that that might be a problem for them finance-wise. So be watching for that. Chris Carson in Seattle, $6.1 million cap hit, $3 million of dead cap. His injury situation makes things a little bit more complicated. So you'd have to see there in terms of what he can, what he is capable of passing in terms of a physical and that type of stuff. It's different designations there. If he fails a physical and how that impacts his finances and the like. So I'm watching that situation. We haven't heard a ton about it, so I'll be watching that one here over the next, couple months here as training camp opens. So, all right, Cordarrelle Patterson, these are some 2023 cut candidates. He headlines $5.5 million cap number in 2023. They can save almost $2 million of that by cutting him. Is about there's a $3.75 million dead cap figure, and then they could save $1.75 million against the cap by cutting him. Algier is very popular for a day three guy. However, I mean, Patterson has, that's not a lot, there's not a huge incentive to cut him. So be interested how that unfolds. There's obvious questions about is someone breaking out at 30, 31 years old really sustainable? There's some of that, hey, he just falls totally off the earth. He could save $1.75 million. But there's plenty of, hey, he plays well enough that we could just play his contract out. There's plenty of that too. So I don't think there's some other ones in here that I think are more likely. I don't think it's super, super likely. I wouldn't say with a ton of confidence, I guess, that Cordarrelle Patterson's going to be cut, which makes Algier an interesting conundrum there. Gus Edwards, $3.25 million, fully guaranteed this season, but they could save $4.4 million in 2023 with only $1.25 million in dead cap and no guarantees. His injuries, along with the Mike Davis signing, should create plenty of concerns there about his health. I still find him interesting as an injury away type, but I am not treating him as anything more right now than a fungible injury away type guy. So that's just a concern that I have because some of the injury stuff, and this is starting to speak to us. So I think if he got through the season, it would be a pretty good spot for him. I think the backup in Baltimore is a pretty good position. We'll see if it's him. And I think he deserves it if he's healthy. Right? That would sort of be my inclination on that one. But his lack of financial commitment along with Mike Davis gives me a little bit of pause. All right, Mixon's due almost $13 million in 2023 with no guarantees left on his contract. The team could save $7.4 million with $5.5 million of dead cap next year. He's signed through 2024, and they could save 10.4 of his $13.1 million cap hit in 2024. So maybe some extensions, some reworks, or the like there are in play. But it'd be interesting to see if he wants to maybe move the numbers around a little bit and get a little bit more guaranteed money here going into the season. So that'll be a watch point for Mixon. P. Ryan still, and I'm going to do a backup running back show here at some point, but P. Ryan still is interesting as an injury away type guy. All right, Ezekiel Elliott, he signed through 2026, but his guarantees are done after the season. The Cowboys would save $4.9 million on his cap hit in 2023 by cutting him, but take a $11.9 million dead cap hit. This actually corresponds with Pollard entering free agency. So if they cut him, they could save $5 million, and maybe that goes towards a Pollard contract, but again, Pollard's probably going to draw more than $4.9 million. So you're already on the worst to that number. So be interested to see how this unfolds there with him and that big contract and what they think of Pollard long term. I think it'll be interesting what the NFL sees Pollard. We've basically gotten through up to free agency with him, or a year short of free agency with him, where we haven't really seen him be the guy. So be interesting to see what the NFL thinks of him. Is he like a Chase Edmonds type? Or is he thought of as something more than that? It'd be interesting to watch for. Speaking of Chase Edmonds, signed a two-year deal worth $12.1 million, but there's no guarantees for 2023 with a $6.6 million cap hit. They could save, the Dolphins that is, could save $6 million of that number in 2023. I'm treating him as purely a this-year play. Purely a this-year play on Chase Edmonds, and that's basically where I'm at in terms of commitment with him. So, and I don't even think it's that great of a, quote, situation or open of a situation, because there is Mostert, there's Gaskin as well. Like you have some competition there that isn't, Chase Edmonds hasn't played well enough with enough volume to convince me that he's the guy that warrants a full-on bell cow role. All right, Dalvin Cook is under contract for $14.1 million cap figure in 2023. He's got no guaranteed money after this year. Vikings could save $7.9 million in 2023 with a $6.2 million dead cap figure. So they would save almost $8 million. It's a decent chunk of money. The Cook contract feels kind of like a turning point for this team, considering old front office, old staff. And they kind of rolled a lot of stuff over, including Cousins. They traded down. Right? They did a lot of the stuff that Minnesota had done in prior iterations. Dalvin Cook's going to feel like one of those ones, if you're an analytics-savvy franchise, that you really push towards. And honestly, even an under-the-radar one would be Madison, right? And so if both of those guys, because Cook is cut and Madison's a free agent, if both of them walk, be really interesting to watch how they go about refilling that. Is that another day three guy a la Ty Chandler or Kenny Ngannou, right? If that's the approach, that's interesting. If not, I think, and they basically bring these guys back or bring back Cook, we're in kind of a interesting stagnant situation with them in their franchise direction. All right, Leonard Fournette signed a three-year, $21 million contract with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the offseason. But he flirted with New England before coming back. Only $2 million of the $6.5 million 2023 salary is guaranteed, so basically a third of it. But Tampa would save 3.5 of his $8.5 million cap hit in 2023. So, again, he'd take a dead cap figure of $5 million versus saving 3.5. Not the biggest. I mean, it's a little bit more incentive. We talked about some of the other ones earlier where there was some, like Cordarrelle Patterson, where there was some incentive but not a ton of incentive. This is kind of on that line of potential cuts there. So I'm treating him as like a likely two-year role, even though it could be only a one-year deal. So that's kind of how I'm treating him. Like I'm treating him as there's James Conner, who I think is locked into 2 years. And then there's Leonard Fournette, who I think is a probable 2 years. So if you're thinking like projecting elections or something like that, that would sort of be strongly or maybe a likely 2 years, right? Instead of a safe 2 years, right? If you're thinking of sort of that type of scale, that would sort of be where I'd be on the Fournette scale. All right, Derrick Henry. This is an under the radar one, and this is one of the things that I think has some implications. So Derrick Henry is due $15 million both this year and next year, $12.5 million salary in 2023, but it's not guaranteed, and they could save $12 million of his $15 million cap hit next year. So he's has a cap hit of $15 million. He's actually due a salary of $12.5 million. They could basically save all of that salary, and they could save all but $3 million of that dead cap hit, open up a huge amount of cap space, and clear his roster spot if they chose to move on. I'm fascinated because, and I've mentioned this a couple of times, I think, on these pods, but I've mentioned that I think there's some, to me, a little bit of signs of decay, if you will, in terms of, I think that there's a drop in efficiency, whether that's after contact, PFF grade, broken tackle rate, like all of those concerning, or all those advanced metrics that you would look at to say, hey, how's someone playing? They were all down. And that just gives me some pause. There's a flip side argument, which is, hey, listen, he was given the ball so much that it was really tough. When you have that many touches, you're just naturally going to be less efficient. This is a little bit like why Zeke and Pollard's not a fair comparison, because Pollard plays a little bit of that gadget type role. Zeke doesn't. And Zeke's getting more of the, what you would consider the quote unquote hard touches, versus where Pollard's getting, you know, he might get it like an end around type deal where he's, you know, able to rip off a 12 yard carry before contact, right? Like those types of things. It's very different. Well, when you give someone force feed them the ball over and over and over again, you're looking 25 touches, the efficiency is just going to come down because people are crowding it. People are up in, up on the line of scrimmage and all of that stuff. You have to balance holding that against Henry and him eroding, right? There's enough. I can't say for certain because of some of the erosion of the efficiency stats that it's him declining as a player because he's getting old. There could be some usage aspect to that as well. So there's a balance there. I think it's interesting because if it happens a second year, are they willing to move on? Right? Are they willing to move on or maybe do something contractually with him? But that's something that I don't think people are talking about. And he's reaching kind of the end of the line in terms of where you would expect age-wise. Like he's sort of getting to a drop-off point, and it was hidden by the fact that he carried the ball a ton last year. So just for what that's worth. And so that's why I've appreciated Hassan Haskins for that point. Okay, 2023 free agents here. Saquon Barkley scheduled to play 2022 on his fifth year option and enter the 2023 season as a free agent. I think that's a almost certainty at this point. They've shown very little inclination to want to extend him. So I expect that they will let him walk and see how it plays out. He's going to get an opportunity in this Brian Daboll offense, which frankly is better. Almost anything's better than the Jason Garrett offense from there the past couple of years. It should get the opportunity to audition for free agency. And it'll be hopefully a more efficient offensive usage for him. And we'll see how that unfolds. But I am, I think he's got a wide range of outcomes. And you could see, if we were to sort of pivot, you know, maybe a Juju Smith-Schuster type of trajectory as a running back, kind of like that one-year prove-it type deal someplace else, I think that's something that's possible. Is he going to get a ton of guaranteed money? And if he's not, like you're kind of playing year to year with him, you start thinking about it of, hey, who else am I playing multiple years with? Right? Are there other guys that I'm paying multiple years with instead of playing year to year, sort of in a cost range where you don't necessarily love playing year to year, where you could say, hey, listen, if I can scrounge together a couple years, this is actually an edge. I think that's a you do have to balance against the fact that he's in theory, a really high point per game potential score. So he's a difficult one. I think if I'm going to get a discount on him into the later teens into the 20s, then I'm interested. But if I'm going to have to pay in running back 10 cost, I'm out. Just because I think there's people later that you can pivot towards. Devin Singletary finishes running back one, tied for running back one with Rashad Penny in the fantasy playoffs last year. The Bills responded by drafting James Cook in the second round, so that tells you what they thought of it. Singletary struggled as a pass catcher. He's basically been one of the worst pass catching running backs in the league, and he's undersized. So you just wonder sort of what is his edge? What does he offer as a sort of a difference making, as a difference making fantasy option? If he's not going to get a ton of the rushing stuff, and if he's not going to catch the ball, just gives me a lot of pause. So I think maybe he's a high end injury weight. You know who he could remind me of a little bit? Would be Jamal Williams, right? Jamal Williams would be an interesting comp for him in terms of maybe a little bit undersized, a little bit non-prototypical, but hung around, basically did a lot of the right stuff, and then could land in like a injury away type situation that might be better than we think. That could be a potential success story for a guy like Devin Singletary. All right, David Montgomery, I think he's overperformed expectation on his rookie deal, at least for me, but is no longer on scholarship with the Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy regime. He's been replaced by the Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus regime. Much tougher to structure that one, the Pace, Nagy, Poles, Eberflus. It just doesn't quite roll off the tongue. Hopefully they perform better. But for pronunciation purposes here, we'll have to keep working on it. Montgomery's the second most rushing yards in his draft class, 2808, behind Josh Jacobs, 3,087, and the most receiving yards of a running back in his class. So can do both, and I think will be an interesting – what's the regime think of him? I think it's a really interesting question about if you're going to pay running back, if a new regime wants to pay running back, if they want to pay the old regime's running back. What do you see stylistically changing? And I guess this new, I don't know if it's new NFL or new, in this new generation of GMs, what do we see different? Well, you're going to be faced early with some of these running back decisions. I think it's going to be really, from a fantasy perspective, this should really make a difference to how we think about these, right? It should change some of our priors in terms of, are we going to see some of these guys walk? And if so, do we treat this, some of the survivorship stuff differently, for example? Like, this is something I'm thinking about rewriting about in AOD. It's doing some of the survivorship stuff. It's been, I think I did it the first AOD. It warrants some revisiting. But one of the things that you could potentially see is if the survivorship numbers don't necessarily change, but I think we have more depth at the position, and some of these teams aren't going to re-up. They're not going to make the Zeke deal or the Gurley deal or these longer term deals. We've quote learned our lesson from them. If that's going to be true, I think it's going to have secondary impacts of what happens with round two running backs or round three running backs, or it might change the base rates, which I just think that's probably not something we'll know the next like 18 months. It's probably going to be something we find out like over the next 3 to 5 years, and we see a little bit of a difference. I think Montgomery is going to be an interesting one to start off that with, as well as Dalvin Cook. See where they where they fall in terms of their teams changing opinions or changing trajectories at the position. Miles Sanders is third in that same class, that 2019 class, which is coming up on free agency. He has rushed fewer times each year in his career, with 137 in 12 games. He averaged 14.6 touches per game in his career. So it's kind of in the running back two type landscape, although I think he's just underperformed it. I'm interested to see. I think this Philly offense, right, if you take the view that this Philly offense could really overperform, how do you invest in it? And you could invest in Devonta Smith. You can invest in Jalen Hurts. I mean, I guess you could go up and invest in A.J. Brown. I'm interested in Goddard. I'm interested in Miles Sanders because I think Miles Sanders at a running back three type cost is something that's definitely interesting. Damian Harris, his future is definitely questionable, I would say, in New England. They visited with Fournette. They've drafted Ramondre Stevenson. They went back to the drawing board with Pierre Strong and Kevin Harris in this draft class. So all of a sudden you're getting really crammed in terms of roster spots. Harris is limited in the passing game. Only 23 catches and 27 games in New England. You wonder, is that him? Is it the system? Do they have concerns that maybe a different team wouldn't? Changing teams can't do anything worse for his receiving profile. So that would be the thing that I would say. And I don't think, based on the way that the team is structured there, you've got some other guys. You've got Stevenson. You've got Strong. You've got James White. And it just really crowds out a situation where you look at a Jacobs who could come in and just be a pass catcher sort of by necessity, be thrust into that role and be okay, you know, be good at it. That just isn't going to happen with a guy like Harris, just by the way he's – just by the structure of the team. And that's kind of what we're seeing. So that's kind of what my thought is on him. It's hard to be worse going someplace else, assuming that he gets the role. Again, delicate balance there, but I think we're seeing him on the way to getting phased out in New England. All right, last real major one here, we've got Josh Jacobs. They turned down his fifth-year option, which make him a free agent in 2023. I think turning down the fifth-year option is probably the right move in a lot of cases now. It's not going to be the right – it's basically going to be the right move to pick it up where you want the contractual leverage on someone that has performed really well. But otherwise, why lock yourself into this? And so now that it's guaranteed, there's no sense in locking it in on Jacobs. There's no sense in locking it in on some of these quarterbacks and the like. You might as well just say, all right, we'll just – no one's going to pay him $8 million, whatever it was, to re-sign him. It's just not going to happen. So you just say, okay, just let's roll the dice and we'll see where it is. And that's what we're seeing with Jacobs. Listen, no Mayock or Gruden regime anymore. That's problematic for his longevity there, probably. The hair Josh McDaniels, we know sort of what that history is like with using a lot of running backs and committees in New England, and they could potentially move on. So we'll see there. What's interesting to me is as you start fast-forwarding on some of these, you look at a situation, for example, like let's just take a look at some of the backup, the running backs specifically on day three that people are projecting to be potential work, whether it's workhorse guys or potential starters, right? You look at, you get Zamir White, you've got Tyler Algier, and you got Damian Pierce, right? The three, and I would put those guys sort of up in the range of the maybe the top three guys, you know, the three guys there in round three, with a lot of people taking them second round. Well, you start looking around and you're like, all right, well, if we're going to add three, four, five guys that are difference makers in the next rookie draft, and you have guys like Barkley, you've got guys like Miles Sanders, you've got guys like, you know, maybe David Montgomery, you've got guys like Josh Jacobs and Harris and all these guys, you're like, wait a second, how does a guy like Algier really get home? Like, what's success look like? Because the supply of these guys is really big, and it's just naturally going to filter out, where I don't think it's going to cost that much to get someone that's a lot better than Tyler Algier in free agency. So that would just be the balance that I would have on some of these. We also have some backup guys. Melvin Gordon, Jamal Williams, Daryl Henderson are the injury away guys. Rex Burkhead, also one of the lowest cost starters in the league, could be a free agent next year. Kenny Drake as well there. So some other guys there on the free agent bend, but I just thought I would throw that in there with the way that this team is, with this position is really structured. We've got plenty of, we've got really plenty of movement, I would expect, here over the next, let's call it 18 months, because there's a lot of free agents going to be combined with a lot of incoming guys, and really could be eroding some of these day three guys that people were high on coming into the season. So that's the deal there. Running back contracts. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.